Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I don't have any comments, and again, I think it's probably a good thing, but we'll try and inspire you to make some comments by the end of the program. So over the last several programs, we have been discussing T.E. Lawrence's adventures as a young archaeologist in training at Carchemish. Now, he really was an adventurer, and with almost everything he did in life, it was an adventure. So I think we should approach our life as adventurers as well. And, of course, now graduation is done, college graduation is done, even our high school graduation is done. We're done with grading papers, grading tests. The students are moving on to their summer activities, and we still have a lot of work to do. So what we want to do is we want to continue our discussion of the chapter called Carchemish in this wonderful book, Hero, by Michael Korda. Now, before we begin today's program, I do want to say a few apologies. And I did get some minor errors in the last couple programs. So, first of all, I want to give all my apologies to the heirs of David Hogarth for my mispronunciation of his name. It is Hogarth, not Hogarth. So I'm very, very sorry about that. Also, in I think the very program just previous to this, I also stated that archaeologist Gertrude Bell was German. Now, here's where I got a little mixed up. She was very familiar with the German school of archaeology and their digging methods. Yet she was very British. And she did become a longtime friend of Lawrence, by the way. But I think she was born in Kent in England, so she definitely was not German. Well, now today, so let's just get right back into this chapter of Carchemish. And so to help me do this, with me in the studio is my dear sweet wife, Deborah. Welcome back, Deborah.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So I thought what we'd do today is, we've been talking about all the adventures and all the how exciting, an archaeological dig can be. And I think for those of us here at Herbert W. Armstrong College, certainly archaeological digs are very, very exciting to us because we have the opportunity to send our students to Jerusalem. And, of course, we're working alongside of Hebrew University, and they're working with Dr. Eliot Lazar, and they're working on, digging some of the great archaeological areas in Jerusalem. And, of course, there's another dig that we're hoping to come up pretty soon. We really can't really speak to it too much yet, but we're really getting excited to be able to send our students back over there. But I think that one thing that Korda does bring out is with archaeological digs, sometimes they're hard going in the sense that, they lose funding. Some digs are very hard to accomplish. I know in Jerusalem it's very hard to accomplish digs because of the ownership of land around the digs. But certainly Lawrence experienced his, troubles with them. And let's just go to page 194, and we can talk a little bit about this. This is also related to Gertrude Bell. And if you remember back to a previous program, we talked about the British desire to let's say excavate at this site in Carchemish. And the reason why they wanted to do it is there was really a competition with the German School of Archaeology. They wanted to have the big finds. They wanted to find like the Rosetta Stone of the Hittite Empire. And so some of the troubles that they really got into with this dig was the Hittite city was buried under a Roman one. And I guess as we can find out in this chapter, the Romans were very good at making cement. And so to get to the Hittite city, you had to dig through not only the mounds of dirt and waste and all that, you had to dig through Roman concrete. And I think one of the things is that the reason why Gertrude Bell comes into the book is first of all, she thought David Hogarth was someone she really wanted to meet, and she happened to be in the Middle East, and she rode her own horse, you know, over a great distance to be able to come to this dig at Carchemish, and she came to see David Hogarth, and who she ran into was T.E. Lawrence. And what T.E. Lawrence was doing is he was using dynamite to break up the Roman concrete over the archaeology site. And if you know anything about archaeology, it's painstakingly, how would you say, fine in detail. You like it's almost, and again, I've never been on a dig, but it's almost, there's some areas you want to like dig with a spoon. And certainly when she saw or heard of the fact that T.E. Lawrence was was literally blowing up the archaeological site, she just about went bananas. And then she was also very upset that she did not find Hogarth there. And so that was the whole thing with Gertrude Bell. So, but anyway, I guess that she and Lawrence at this time got into this big argument over how to dig and how to dig properly. And of course, then she said the Germans were much better. I think what I could do is let me just, maybe we could break into this. The story begins on, let's say, page 194, and it talks about Gertrude Bell, and her work. She was very kind of courageous as a woman to go into the Middle East, you know, almost like alone or by herself or maybe with a guide. And so she was a very courageous woman, just like I think T.E. Lawrence was very courageous. But here's what it says on page 185. It says, after lunch, the three of them proceeded to the mound, where Bell observed the men excavating and condemned the methods being used as prehistoric. She was notoriously outspoken and critical. Compared with those of the Germans, Lawrence maintained that the German methods, while they looked neater, involved a great deal of reconstruction, but eventually they were made peace over dinner and parted friends, mutual admirers when she retired to the tented camp Fatuda, and that was her servant had set up for her. So he goes on to say that they would remain friends until her death, despite many furious arguments. So you can see that obviously, T.E. Lawrence is very fiery about the way he had to do things. And, of course, she was very, very specific on how she should do things. But it is kind of fascinating when you look at archaeology. And I know even in England, of course, I have, several really good friends in England. And even to build a house in England, it's just not that easy because you could be digging up history. And so there is a lot you have to deal with. And then even in this section that say about Carchemish is Hogarth, they really were not getting the big Rosetta Stone find that they thought. And so they were thinking of delaying digging. And, of course, I think, we have Brent Noctegal and we have Chris Eames, who were students that were sent on these digs, and they've become very fine assistants for Dr. Mazar and helping her along the way. And I'm sure they've experienced, similar difficulties, with digging. And to our advantage is our students have helped find some very big finds. And, of course, we've had them on display here at Armstrong Auditorium. So I think it's interesting that Hogarth considered not continuing the dig at Carchemish, and that's he really attracted T.E. Lawrence to go there. And so then he decided that he was going to get Lawrence on the dig in Egypt. And so I think we probably have some funny things to say about that, don't we, dear? He did not like Egypt, did he?
Yes, he didn't like Egypt. So it's kind of funny.
We're kind of skipping ahead a little bit, but yeah, I think so, we could talk about
it. Yeah, so it's more like he just, he didn't like the Egyptians. He didn't like the way the Egyptians spoke Arabic.
He didn't like the way they cooked.
The way they cooked. It was just kind of funny that he at this point he was already really, really taken with the Arabs. I guess.
Oh, very much so.
But he just did not like the Egyptians. So he was not really impressed with digging up mummies. He didn't really like that.
He didn't want to dig up dead people.
No, he didn't. He just didn't appreciate that. It somehow he didn't like that at all.
Well, I think it's part of it is that I think we'll talk about this a little bit later, but obviously Lawrence changed his religious views when he really began to mold himself into becoming more of an Arab in personality, Arab in desire, Arab in the culture, the way he liked that, to live in the desert and all of that. But I do think that he had a certain amount of respect for the dead, and that you shouldn't be digging them up and separating their, skulls from their spines and, things like that. So I think it's he just did not like Egypt at all. He did not want to be that kind of an archaeologist. So I think, that's probably about all we need to say about that. But I thought it was interesting that it's Hogarth that really did a lot of manipulation for him in the background. I mean, I think Corder brings out a really good point there that it just seems like Lawrence, could always get his way. And it seemed like Hogarth was in there helping him. And of course, he felt it would be just for the very next step for him to work for this Flinders Petrie in Egypt. And of course, as we go along with this, we just want people to understand that really, I don't think that T.E. Lawrence was that necessarily committed to becoming an archaeologist.
Right. He certainly was interested in certain aspects, but it was more like he was leaning more towards the adventurous kind of parts of it.
Oh yeah.
Yes, more so than the actual archaeology.
Yes, and I think there's also one point that Corder brings out in this section of the book too, that he was really still trying to decide whether he was going to be a newspaper man or a novelist. And I think one of the things we have to understand about T.E. Lawrence is he really in some ways was not a balanced person, but in other ways he was a balanced person. In other words, he loved the digging. He loved, we're going to talk about it before we get to the end of this program, that he really liked building. He liked building buildings. He loved woodworking. He loved sculpture. But he also loved writing and he loved poetry. And so he even on these digs, if you remember when Churchill was in India, he had his mother send him books, and he would spend his siesta times, or everyone else would be sleeping, he would be reading and studying. Well, Lawrence was the same way. He was reading the classics. He was reading poetry. He was developing, let's say, his understanding of how to write, and he wanted to be, a good writer, of course, and he did. He wrote Seven Pillars of Wisdom later, and you have to imagine him, in his robes reading the Greek classics. it'd be really funny. I think the other thing when we were talking about just like archaeological dig troubles, I mean Corder spends a lot of time talking about what happened to them when the weather began to get warm. If you remember, he started there when it was cooler. Then it started to get warm, so they had a plague of locusts they had to deal with. Then they had sand flies they had to deal with. And then it became so hot in the building that he was building that he would just go out and sleep on the mound, and he would get bit by fleas, but that never seemed to bother him. Anything really tough, anything that made him tough, he liked.
Yes, right. That, he liked that. Yeah, he did.
He loved the heat.
Yes.
In fact,
physical challenges. Yes.
He loved the heat. He even believed in taking hot baths and encouraged his parents at home to take more hot baths. I mean, I bet they were scalding hot baths, you know. So the other thing in this section, I think, is for being as tough as he was, he still had a few physical weaknesses that really, really hurt him. And one was he did have malaria, and he had recurring bouts of it. And then even when he was on this dig in Carchemish, he got dysentery, I mean, really bad, and really did almost die. And so you know, I think, you know, when you look at, let's say, the, you know, the Indiana Jones movies, you know, they don't show all of the disasters that could happen, you know, when you're on a dig. And it certainly there is adventure with it, but there's also some other things that, you know, can happen to you. Now, in terms of the dysentery, I think Corder brings it out that he did not care how he ate. Like, he ate right with the Arabic peoples. And, of course, other Europeans knew when they came into that area, don't do that, you know.
Yes, it does say that he just did not care. It didn't care if he got sick, it seemed like. Yeah. And he didn't take all the precautions with food and water that the Europeans knew to do. So he just went ahead and just let what happened happen. Yeah. He gets sick when he got sick, seems
so,
like.
So some of the Arabic people were really trying to help him and take care of him. And I think it's interesting, you know, in this section also, he wrote a letter, like an official legal document, saying that if he died, it wasn't their fault. You know, that it was his fault and that they shouldn't be, you know, punished for him dying. That would have been really bad for them because of the Turkish government to have an Englishman killed or die under their care because, you know, to be honest, the Turks were playing, you know, double fiddle. They were trying to appease the Germans and the British. They didn't want to lose, you know, influence with either one. So eventually, I think in this chapter is that everything kind of slowed down at Carchemish. They delayed the dig, and then Lawrence decided to go home. And I think it's interesting on page 201 that when he decided to go home, he really did not know what he was going to do. And in some ways, this is typical of all, let's say, young college students. I know it happened in my case. I think I changed my what I was going to get my final degree in a couple times. But at the bottom of page 201, it says, in his case, it was not so much that he couldn't decide what to do with himself as that he had too many choices and self-imposed obligations. Hogarth, he learned, had secured the funds for a second season of excavation at Carchemish. Flinders Petrie had accepted him for a stint of tomb digging in Egypt. And then his friend Vivian Richards was still eager to proceed with the printing press scheme that they had. And so when he got home and he was recuperating, and it's really his mother Sarah that really brought him back to full health, that he was trying to decide what to do. And of course, what we know is that he decided to go ahead and go back to Carchemish. And so I don't think it was Carchemish so much that attracted him as it was just getting back with the Arabic peoples.
Yes, well, he did love them. He loved it. At one point, I'm not sure, I was trying to see where it was, where he talks about how he really did not like England anymore. I mean, he thought England, he described England as being fat and too green.
Yeah.
It's too green, and it was just, there's just too much green. It was, you know, and it was just too much, whereas he liked the openness and the emptiness, I guess.
And the desert.
The desert.
But I think it was part of his, I mean, he really did, he did not mind pain. I mean, he did not mind adversity. And in fact, I think he was enthralled by it. And so if it was hot and desolate and there was a challenge there, he loved it. I mean, that's really what he liked. So I think we could be maybe move on there now a little bit and talk about that Lawrence really did grow in popularity with the Arabic people there, even as an archaeology student. And, you know, he did not. Page 197, I think, is interesting, and I'll read some of this to you, those of you that are out there listening in. is he really did not. He did not like the foreign influence on the Arabic peoples. He knew that the Arabic peoples need to be better educated, but he thought they should be educated, let's say, by Arabics or by Arab peoples, and they should be educated in their own history. They should be educated in their own language. And, when they're out on the digs, these are Arabic people that are not educated. And not to say that they all aren't educated, but he really resisted. And this is what Cordes says. It says, Lawrence deplored the intrusion of foreign influence, particularly French and American, on the Arabs, and adds, the foreigners come out here always to teach, whereas they had much better learn. And so he's saying, look, you have to learn about these people. You have to learn their likes and their dislikes, and you have to kind of come up beside them and not just come in and act like they're dumb nimwits or idiots. And so he really, I think he really began to make those close working relationships with the Arabs on this dig. And of course he did meet Dahum. He met Sheikh Hamadi. He was like a big brother to Dahum, is what Korda tells us. And we know that actually when he had to go back to England, he made sure that Dahum got to the American school so that he could be better educated. And he really did have a lot of interest in the Arabic people. I think we could also skip ahead a little bit to, let's go to page 218 for all of those of you that are out there. One of the reasons why we are covering this book, here we are in the 21st century, because Lawrence was dealing with the Middle East problems that we are still dealing with today. And, if you really look at it at that time, and I think Korda does a great job of bringing this out, that the Arabs were not getting along with the Kurds. And they could just flash into fighting, with each other. And, of course, he dealt with the blood feuds among them, among the Arabs as well. And you still have, we still have those same tensions in the Middle East today between the Kurds and the Arabic peoples. And this infighting has never gotten solved. And so even Herbert Armstrong told us, that all the world trouble is eventually going to center on Jerusalem. And, that it's just a tinderbox. And so I think it's very, very fascinating that here Lawrence really worked hard to keep things calm. Of course, he met another archaeologist, Woolley, who he really was friends with. Korda lists a whole list of military men that he became friends with, and so he really was working, I think, to bring a measure of calm to that area. But right in the middle of page 218, it says, even next to the camp where Woolley and he were kind of working together, it says, the countryside was in an uproar in any case, since the Turks were busy trying to round up recruits for the army as the Balkan Wars dragged on, and the Kurds were threatening to rebel, as they always did when there was any hint of weakness in Constantinople. In a letter to Leeds, Lawrence mentioned casually that he had suffered two broken ribs in a scuffle with a belligerent Arab. He treats this incident with his usual disdain for injuries of any kind. Hints of various other scrapes with the authorities and local Arabs are scattered throughout his letters. It seems likely that at some point he was briefly imprisoned by the Turks, and that at another point he and Woolley were involved in a lawsuit from a local landowner, which Woolley solved in his own swashbuckling manner by threatening the judge. Under the capitulations, foreigners in Turkey were more or less immune from Turkish law. It is certain that Lawrence was involved in an illicit and secret plot. Lawrence describes it as the iniquity of gun running. to smuggle rifles from ashore from a British warship into the British consulate in Beirut so that the staff members could protect themselves in the event of an anticipated Kurdish rising. so if you look at, I mean, you can go back and study the Middle East since the U.S. got involved in the Persian Gulf War, and we've been having trouble with the Kurds and the Arabic peoples. And so it's not really any different today. And so the problems are still there. The problems have not been solved. And, of course, we know, I think we have a good understanding that these problems are really not going to get solved until mankind solves his character issues. It's a character problem. So anyway, all of you out there, pages 218 to 221, I'm not going to read them all to you, but you need to read and study that section because it just shows that the Middle East of today was the same Middle East of T.E. Lawrence's day. And so I do think that's really interesting. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. Next time, we'll finish our discussion of Lawrence at Carchemish. Now, remember, for this current series of programs, we are using Michael Korda's book, Hero, The Life and Legend of Lawrence of Arabia. You can buy this book at Amazon.com. You can also find the used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can also follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1, and you can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.